I'll just run through some of the visual references used in that video. We have the aftermath of the Battle of the Teutoburg Forest, where the Roman legions were famously stopped from expanding the empire further into Germany. We had the Knights of the Holy Roman Empire and the Teutonic Knights. We had the cannibalistic Lutheran monks of the Reformation, the 30 Years' War, the Hindenburg disaster, the inflation and decadence of the Weimar Republic, the Nazis and the V2 rocket, the East Germans in space, of course. That was the first German in space was an East German. The East German communist regime, the Red Army faction in the West, and lastly, the birth of something called the Leonberger puppy. Typically, and in the light of this talk, dynamic, bleak view of their own history. It will be noticed that there's no great men like Frederick the Great, Amunus, Bismarck, or Hitler, but only a succession of disasters, of which the implication is that this was caused somehow by some inherent characteristic of what it is to be German. A nice touch is that Germania herself is portrayed by a very famous black German actress, and as the only woman to make an appearance. I say there were no actual historical characters portrayed, but there was one important exception, of course, Karl Marx. He is unfortunately identified with the East German Bolshevik puppet regime, and this is an anachronism to which I will return later. Lastly, the closing credit sequence is one of the most poignant I have ever seen, with a beautiful piano version of another Rammstein song based on the German fairy tale of Snow White. Of course, many of these myths and images were devised by the nationalist intelligentsia of the new German state in an effort to create a German historical identity. Of course, Rammstein have subverted this project by rejecting any heroic or romantic elements, but there remains an acknowledgement of just how powerful these myths are by their embracing an antithetical version of it. Like the children of abusive parents, there is still a need to love them. As I say in the lyrics, Germany, your love is a curse and a blessing. Germany, my love, I cannot give you. I suspect this is how many Germans feel about themselves and their cultural identity. They suspect that they have a darkness of the soul. This was not always the case. After unification, Germans were full of optimism for the future, as is evidenced by the mass membership of the Second International. But this was to be fatally undermined by the nationalism that destroyed it and made the descent into the madness of the First World War possible. The socialism of Marx and the First International was lost. Many reasons are given for this, including the theory that it was the failure of the German Revolution of 1848 that enabled the slide into autocracy and militarism, which was to last, with the short-lived exception of the Weimar Republic, until the Nazis were defeated in 1945. With the partition after the war, the Bolshevik puppet state of East Germany was identified with socialism. And since this is where Rammstein originated, it's not surprising that we see Marx identified with that state in this video. This identification with the cultural past is one of the main aspects of identity politics and is an important obstacle to socialist consciousness. Of course, we're all created by the historical context into which we are born. And there are many positive aspects of all cultures that should be celebrated. But the danger always is that political elites can use this by creating myths of superiority and exclusivity. That is the cornerstone of reactionary nationalist ideology. Cultural development depends on the intersection of human communities and a flourishing delight in the novelty and ingenuity of invention and imagination of other people and their languages and myths. It is the enemy of fear and ignorance caused by the political manipulation and creation of suspicion that elites often use to protect their own wealth and power. There has long been a celebrated aesthetic contrast between the Europe of the North and that of the South. The Mediterranean cultures of Greece and Rome have represented light, logic, and democracy, whereas the dark forests of the north represent the brooding aesthetic of the Romantic and of the Gothic. It was the Goths, of course, who destroyed the Western Roman Empire and inaugurated the Dark Ages, where the material culture and intellectual progress of the classical age was lost for hundreds of years until it flickered back into life during the Renaissance. We can now both enjoy both aesthetic traditions, but the political consequences of Romanticism have always been highly problematic. Can we make cultural connections with political evolution? The Enlightenment was the inheritor of the classical tradition of reason and logic, but in the hands of the bourgeoisie, it became an oppressive and inhuman transition from quality into quantity. Everything had to have a numerical equivalent before it could be considered a science. From what cultural inheritance does socialism emerge? Perhaps like capitalism, socialism was primarily European origins. Certainly the Marxian tradition is steeped in French politics, German philosophy and British economics. Culture gave birth to both Nietzsche and Marx, whose legacy still combat each other today. German nihilism still haunts us, and perhaps after Auschwitz, it always will. As socialists, we must never ignore cultural myths and realities. As this video shows, such identification still runs deep within the working class. That's it. Ender, as they say in the video.
Thanks, Rose. Well, does anybody want to make a comment? Wes, do you want to, no, actually, it's not fair to ask you. You're not used to this. Okay, well, I'll just sort of.
Andy, can I say an initial word?
Yeah, please do. Yeah.
Andrew, yeah. Well, I suppose two things come to mind. The first one was I have to say I found it really difficult watching that video. I don't know. I suppose that the word that comes to mind in describing it is grotesque. I found it grotesque.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Not the idea of showing it, but the actual video itself.
Yes. Yeah, that's very German, I think.
Yeah. I found it grotesque, and I wondered, you know, what need the people who made it found to actually make it. I mean, I'm sure it reflected a lot the kind of realities you've talked about, sort of, you know, sort of pretty accurately, one way and the other. But, God, I mean, some of the scenes were horrific. I mean, I know it was only make-believe, in the sense that those things didn't really happen. They did happen historically, but not in the making of the film. But nevertheless, it was incredibly realistic and sort of pretty mind-blowing one way and the other.
I mean, I'm sure your sensibilities were outraged, Edna.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, there are lots of other similar videos that have been made by the same director or the same people. Perhaps you can tell us about that. That's one. My first immediate reaction. Second reaction is you mentioned unification, and at first I thought you were talking about German reunification.
I meant the original.
You meant the original. That's right. Yeah. I realised that you did mean that, and I'm not sure how many people sort of know about the original unification, the 19th century. I know a lot about, for example, because of my own sort of background, about Italian unification, and the German unification was quite similar, really, wasn't it? I mean, you'd had lots of different small states which sort of came together as a single one. Yeah. And I don't know whether it's worth sort of commenting on that as some kind of sort of historical background to the kind of thing that happened later, that happened, you know, in the 20th century. Anyway, just to throw out a few initial thoughts there.
Yeah, obviously there's so much packed into those 9 minutes that it would take, a volume of some length to describe any of them in detail. And, of course, German unification is one of those. always like the story that Bismarck, who's sometimes given the credit for unifying Germany, was of course the last thing he wanted. He wanted to keep Prussian hegemony still intact. But he saw it as historically inevitable. So he tried to control it. And, of course, in some ways, he maintained the power of the Prussian state in terms of the king, who, of course, after sacking Bismarck, went on to, and his son went on to inaugurate the First World War. Or an important part of why the First World War happened was the retention of the king, of the autocracy, if you will. And the other thing about the grotesqueness, I don't know if you watch many contemporary music videos. I think Rammstein are exceptional in their kind of German tradition of grotesqueness, which I mentioned earlier on in the video, which I don't particularly enjoy either. But I thought the imagery was, as you say, mind-boggling and dramatic. And of course, being a lover of history, I love to pick out, you know, where the source of a lot of those images were taken from.
Why do you think the credits were particularly significant?
I just found that piano solo so poignant, and the sadness that the band feel about who they are in terms of being German. I thought it told you really everything you need to know about the band and how they feel about who they think they are.
Do you think?
Yeah, I think we probably need to sort of look at it again together. There's obviously a lot of depth in it that one doesn't necessarily pick up the first time. But
no, I mean, it'd be impossible to do so unless, even if you have a working knowledge of German history, that there's so much packed in there.
Yeah, thanks for that, yeah.
Just to remind people, anybody wants to speak, just put your hand up. while nobody's got their hand up, just a couple of observations I had, which was, there's been quite recently a three-part drama series called Barbarian, which is all about Arminius and the Teutoburg Forest, done in German, really well. I can't speak for the sort of German they're speaking. I don't know if it's kind of, you know, first century German or modern, but I do know that all the Romans in it do speak genuine Latin.
Oh, really?
Cool. Yeah, so you can hear authentic Latin being spoken, and spoken well from what I can tell. You know, the pronunciation is not like modern Italian would be, you know.
Oh, I love this endless search for authenticity.
Well, that's part of the thing. It's like now you've got you've got sort of TV streaming stations that have got the budgets of, you know, major Hollywood studios, probably bigger than that, in fact. They're able to sort of mount these kind of epic historical exercises. We've got Napoleon at the cinema just at the moment.
Yeah. I can't get enough of them,
man. And the realism and the production values of these things is just through the roof. They're just astounding.
I do miss the old-fashioned cast of thousands, like the Battle of Waterloo made in
1763, I think.
The whole Red Army just about.
That's right. Well, I think the film Napoleon, I haven't seen it, but they do use a very large cast. They use very, very few special effects, very few.
Oh, really?
Very little CGI, yeah.
Good, because, I understand the use. Like you say, it makes these big epics possible on a smaller budget. But I'm glad they're going old school again.
The interesting thing I thought was about the Barbarian series was, I know that there are socialists who just think TV and film is just, you know, the circus that goes along with the bread, and not to pay any attention to it. But I always, I always think there's a there are deep sort of social significances in why this, why now, and the barbarian thing in particular. I thought was interesting. There is a statue of Arminius in, I don't know if it's in Berlin or where it is. But he's a huge cultural hero in Germany.
Yes, and, and of course trained by the Romans.
Yes,
which is how he managed to beat them at their own game. Yeah, well, reminds me a bit of Kursk.
Well, he did a bit of a massive dirty trick on them, of course, didn't he?
Oh, I mean,
it wasn't really heroic. It was just he stabbed them stabbed him in the back when they trusted him. But what I was going to ask was. You know, why barbarian, why now, why this video, why now? And I'm just wondering if this is kind of, is this a kind of, you had just said 30 years ago that the Germans were suffering from a sort of crisis of guilt over their 20th century history, which you would now sort of think maybe they were overcoming, because now what you're seeing, of course, is the rise of the far right in Germany, as you're seeing across a lot of Europe. And I was wondering if the Rammstein thing is some kind of attempt to an antidote to that. You know, is this Rammstein? Is there a force in German politics which is trying to say, look, what we are is from, you know, from what we've been and what's been before, far right is just not the way to go. I don't know if you think.
Well, I mean, of course, from our point of view, we need an international or multicultural consciousness, rather than this endless searching for a cultural separateness identity. That is the heart, I think, deep down of the reactionary politics you're talking about. This idea of exclusivity and superiority. And they're still seem trapped in that, which I think was why I found the video interesting. They have, none of them, it would seem, have turned to political consciousness. They've all turned back to this traumatic trying to come to terms with who they think they are, i.e. the result of this history, which is, so much of it is mainly myths as far as I can see. Put together intentionally, you know, by the intelligentsia to make something called Germany, which was, like all nation states, just an illusory political entity. It has no, this endless search for identity in those terms, I think it's fruitless and always will be.
Okay, Howard's got his hand up. Howard?
Yeah, sorry. The last thing I want to do is monopolise, but since nobody else has got their hand up, just a word about, you know, the meaning, the implication of what we saw on the screen in contemporary terms, in what you might call political terms. Rammstein see themselves as sort of progressive, as it were, as anti-authoritarian and so on, and they're showing all this horror to actually sort of influence it against us. But the trouble is, different people can draw different conclusions from this. I mean, you know, this sort of, you know, the right wing sort of movement that we see in Germany and other European countries might think, yeah, you know, we need to sort of have a clear out of people, etc., etc., and take it completely the other way. Yeah. So it's definitely open to interpretation. I mean,
I agree. But that's to do with this pressure that most people seem to have between, you know, political consciousness and individual understanding of who they are.
Yeah, and to sort of just to sort of an analogy with this, the same kind of thing in a way that on a way, I can't remember if it's on one of the party's own Facebook pages, perhaps on the Southwest branch, have got their own Facebook page, and there's been a sort of discussion there recently about that song, You Can't Get Me, I'm Part of the Union. You remember that one, The Straw? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can't get me, I'm... And I always saw that as a profoundly anti-union song. Yeah. I always saw it like that. But one or two people were saying, no. It was meant to be taken literally. That I mean, you know, the unions were, all right, the union was at a time the unions were being seen as a sort of plague who were blighting everything. And this was a sort of ironic song saying, yeah, it's true, you know, if you're part of the union, you're okay, you can't be touched.
Whereas, Red Robber, I think, who actually said that, didn't he?
But apparently, the Straubs themselves said they were pro-union. No, they didn't mean people to interpret it like that. They thought it was a good thing that the unions were able to sort of exert influence. So these things, as I say, drawing an analogy there, but they're always open to interpretation, and I would say this one certainly is, anyway.
Yeah, there's always a danger of romanticising the heroic past, but of course, there was no upbeat sequences, nothing about the Enlightenment, you know, or any of the music of Germany. It was all very depressing and downbeat, which I think is really what the band is about. I think they are wrestling with their identity as individuals and as a band. Of course, they were formed in East Germany. All the members mainly came from East Germany, so perhaps that's another element.
Okay, thanks. Brian Johnson, you got your hand up.
Yeah, just a curious request in regards to what it's all about, because I've got to be honest, I didn't understand much of it. You know, I didn't identify with some of the imagery that was put up, but largely speaking, well, I did identify it with is a classical or classic, not a classical, classic example of postmodernism up its own ass, so to speak. I don't know if you agree with that, Andrew.
Sorry, man, I must admit, I didn't catch some of what you said there. Could you repeat?
Postmodernism up its own ass.
That's correct.
Yeah, of course, they're within that culture, as we all are. I've always viewed postmodernism as a wonderful opportunity to refute everything they believe, you know. I enjoy postmodernism because it's so infinitely wrong about everything. That's why I love it. I don't know that if you could call the video postmodern. I suppose, like every contemporary, that they're aware of these different interpretations, so they don't ever preach. There's rarely you get any didactic content in anything in rock music these days. Perhaps in the band called Disturbed, they're rather more straightforward in their politics, but it's very rare. But I think, for me, the power of Rammstein is the music, you know. It just and the sadness. That's what I always get from it.
Okay, thanks, Keith. You got your hand up?
Yeah. Hi. Can you hear me there?
Yeah.
Oh God, that's a improvement on my usual performance. Yeah, I was just going to say, if you were to interpret that or misinterpret it, you'd have to be fucking stupid, because like, look at they've got Germania and it's our black lass.
I thought that was a great touch.
Possibly misinterpret Rammstein. The guys are like, they've got like shovels in their hands and they're hitting you on the head and going, Germany is bad, Germany is bad. If you were to then turn around and say, oh, I like German nationalists, let's put Leopard tanks in the Ukrainian, you'd have to be so absolutely stupid to misinterpret that whole
However, of course, in their lyrics, they do say, we want to love you, but we can't. So there's still this kind of course,
absolutely, because remember, I think this is like the whole thing here. You've got to think of them as East Germans, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got that bloody great head of Marx there for a start. and you've got a sort of, you know, you've got nothing there at all about West Germany. You've got, like, it's almost as if it's like, well, what's happening in West Germany? Oh, I don't know, because I wasn't there.
Well, I think the Bahnhof, that was mainly...
It's like it's a kind of like, well, you've got the big Marx head and you've got some guys in the Politburo or something, yeah, and they're like arguing about, so I don't know what the hell they're arguing about, but it is an odd thing. And I would say they are anti-Deutsch people. They're the people who you heard about who basically they hate Germany, and quite rightly so. And I think that comes over completely. And I think, yeah, I'd be anti-German like that if I was a German, because I don't think you can look at German history and not see people cannibalising themselves and things like that.
You couldn't be anti-German because presumably you agree with a lot of what Karl Marx said, and there's no one in history more German than Karl Marx.
To be fair, again, Karl Marx was an Englishman. By the time he died, I mean, he came over here when he was, what, I don't know, 30 or something? But within about 10 years, he was living in Kentish Town and swilling down beer. So it's like, you know, he's a proper Englishman.
I think he always maintained the dialectic right till the last. And that, for me, is a quintessence of being German, what it is to be a German intellectual, anyway. But I agree, he was an internationalist. That's, of course, more important. But I think, plainly, his roots were in German culture. That's, I think he himself would acknowledge that. Did you not think so?
Can I just say, sorry for being an idiot. That's really put me in my place.
It's hard to deny the points he was making. However, there is this abiding need, I think, in Rammstein to love their culture. In a way, I suppose that video featured all the, you know, as I say, the downside. There was none of the more positive things that Germany as culture has given us. So, I mean, he's absolutely right. It would seem to be anti-German, but I don't think the band is anti-German. I think it's just wrestling with what it is to be German. I think that's the main impression I get from... Of course, I know I'm familiar with a lot of their other work, so I'll put this in that context, which presumably you guys probably are unaware of the rest of their oeuvre. Any hands? Oh, there's a hand. Adam.
Yeah, the German national anthem. Maybe we haven't got a German speaker here. It's Deutschland über allen, Deutschland über alles. I mean, that people interpret that to mean Germans ruling over everybody else, but surely it just means Germany first. But, I mean, it's an English equivalent of that, isn't it? I vow to thee, my country, all earthly things above. So yeah. I mean, all nationalisms. You know, put this first. I mean, you could say that the Israelis are saying Juden über alles. You know, they put their, all nationalisms put their people first. That doesn't necessarily mean that they want to rule over all other people. I mean, this is their first, you know, their first loyalty. I mean, other countries have their myths. You know, I'm sure Howard could talk about the myth of Italy, but, you know, France and Asterix the Gaul. I mean, the French weren't Gauls. You know? Franks, the Germans. But anyway, it's the misinterpretation in popular culture of what Deutschland über alles means. I don't think it means, obviously, what it's come to mean in wartime propaganda. I don't know what your view on that is.
How much would you say, Adam, does socialism depend on German culture? Would you say there is an inextricable link between the two?
Well, I mean, you know, Kautsky famously said, wasn't he, that Marxism is what, German philosophy, English political economy, and French politics. But I don't think much of German philosophy, but I know you do. But
Well, you know, as I said, I think the dialectic, without the dialectic, we, you know, Marx couldn't have existed as we know him.
Yeah, well, I mean, true, Marx was, as you said, originally a German intellectual.
Yeah.
Everybody who was born was in that period was, well, not everybody, but a lot of people were Hegelians, but I mean that's a historical contingent fact. It isn't necessarily an essential part of socialist theory.
Okay, so you don't think socialism owes any undue debt to German culture then?
Well, Marx and Engels wrote a thing called the German ideology, didn't they? Which was once again.
They did.
An attack on German culture, if you like.
Yeah, it was an antithesis of.
Okay, I've got other people with their hands up, so
okay,
let's just Brian again.
Yeah, I just back on to what Adam just said about the German ideology. Don't forget that the German ideology was written in respect of a lack of. How can I say, an evolution of German capitalism?
Yeah.
Right? With the, you know, German capitalism, philosophically speaking. Hence the famous remark that Marx chucked up, what was his name now? The philosophy of poverty, or he turned around and he just twisted around and he said the poverty of philosophy, you know, made the point that as far as he was concerned, there was a lack of German philosophy in particular, hence the German ideology. You know, him and Engels were looking for, with the introduction of and the evolution of the capitalism, that also there would be a philosophical defense of capitalism. And they looked and looked, and it seemed to them it never appeared. Hence, they produced the German ideology, right? You know, to point out that capitalism in Germany had not been fully developed, right? It still had a long way to go because, you know, capitalism, like all social systems, it don't just cover economic aspects of it. It also covers the political aspects, or the political elements, right? And also the social elements. And what had developed in Germany was the economic aspects, right? But also, the backup economic, there was no philosophical, and also the social was unevenly developed. Hence, the lack of elimination of other classes within Germany. The middle class was still evident there, and that is the. The original bourgeoisie, the bourgeoisie class had not come forward at all. The working class was evident, but also what was evident was the merchantilism class and the peasant class. They were still evident, and the aristocracy was still evident there as well. You know, capitalism, as far as Marx and Engels was concerned, you know, it was not fully developed within Germany at that particular time, like, you know. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why this video that we've just seen is such a bloody hodgepodge of everything and all things, you know, which does give it a certain aspect of, like you mentioned, and I mentioned as well, you know, or postmodernism, you know, make your own identity on it, you know, and I suspect that what's occurred in Germany at this particular time is the German working class, right? If you can call them that, right? Because it's, Germany, since the war, has become such a diverse cosmopolitan society. There's just about everybody there, and they are still welcoming people there to, you know, to go there. So as far as particular or Pacific German identity, working class identity is concerned, it's going to be very, very difficult. You know, it's not well established. Like, you know, reunification is just around the corner. So, but I've spoken enough. Yeah, you know, I get on with it.
There's a few things I could disagree with. For instance, the impact of Bismarck on the acceleration of the industrial capabilities of Germany. I mean, they helped, by the time of the First World War, I think their production had outstripped our own, Britain's. So capitalism wasn't backward in terms of the industrialisation process. But politically, I think you're right, the failure of the 1848 revolution, the bourgeoisie tried to take power, but it wasn't to be. And I think you're right, politically, that held them back. But I think industrially and economically, they were probably the most advanced capitalist economy in Europe by the time of the First World War.
Okay, we've got Keith. Keith's got his hand up. Next.
Oh, yeah, sorry, it's me again. Can you hear me again?
Yeah.
Grand.
Looking very relaxed.
But this is for you, I'm afraid, Andrew. It's about, because I love Rammstein. I mean, they're great.
Rock on.
When they, because someone said about the Uber Allen, because there's just this thing about that, because what they're doing there is, rather than saying Deutschland über alles, which is the old thing over everything, and that's like expansive, this is like Deutschland über allen, which is over everyone. So what they're doing there is they're saying, well, no, this isn't about that sort of expansionist Germany. This is about Germany as it kind of dominates the idea, and it's about people. And I think that's kind of
Buddhism,
the idea of, like, the ideology of nationalism, I think. And I think it probably affected those guys from the East more than it did of the West, because they were, their idea of Germany was a different idea of Germany. They'd been brought up with like, no, leave that past behind. Look at the nice bits of Germany, because the East was a bit like that. It likes, well, here's your culture, in you go, have some nice culture. Don't think about like Germany as like Germany more marching into Poland and shit like that. It was like, go back and have a look at all the culture you've got. And I think that was a really big shock to people from the East, because we kind of, after reunification particularly, they wanted to lump in East Germany and West and the Nazis and say, this is the exception in German history. In fact, more and more it's becoming the East is the exception in German history. And in a way it was. And I think this what they're doing here is saying, well, no, look, you've got to look at this nationalism. It's really, really not a good idea. And I'm greatly sympathetic to them. Anyway, sorry about that. That was really funny, that one.
Do you think Rammstein are wrestling with their identity as Germans, as many liberals I think do?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think that's primarily what they're about as a band.
Well, really, I think they go, I hate to be a bit, I think they're a bit more radical than liberals myself. I think really, being from the East, they really want to do Marx again. And they really want to do that kind of, yes, we're part of the proletariat here. Yes, right. That's grand, because that's the way they were brought up.
Okay.
And I think that they're kind of wanting what. One thing I don't know if you know about the lead singer, he was like one of these guys who hopped over the wall when it came down in November, and like he was like, well, he went over there and he thought, fuck that, and he went back home again.
Right,
the wall's down, yeah, I'm going to go and, I'm going home now.
I heard he was a stonemason, and he was working in a churchyard when the lead guitarist, the man who puts together most of the tunes, was just passing by, and he heard this voice and said, yeah, this is the singer for our band. So I love that story. I hope it's true. Any more hands? No more hands? Okay. So if we had a vote, it would seem that my contention that the relationship between German culture and socialism is not quite as close as I previously thought.
Yeah, well, Mike Foster's got his hand up, so he might agree with you or disagree.
It was about something else, really. I'm not sure. I don't know... Rammstein. I'd sort of vaguely heard of them before this evening, but I sort of didn't know much about sort of the substance or their sound. I'll have to look into them a bit more. The point I was going to make sort of shifts the subject a bit, so feel free to shift it back.
No worries.
When I think of German music, you know, Kraftwerk springs to mind, and to me, obviously they're quite sort of influential and prominent in their sort of place in the history of music, and you know they
and the Big Lebowski, of course.
and their sound, especially in the 70s, represents a very sort of a confident, sort of technologically optimistic sort of stance, and because they're so identified with Germany, you know, there's that easy sort of connection to make. You know, they're sort of having a sort of a confident shout out about the sort of efficiency of German technology. You could sort of take that slide with Kraftwerk, that there is a bit more wit and subtlety in there, and the album Radioactivity is a bit more sort of sceptical of technology. And of course, the band itself developed from quite sort of folksy, proggy roots. They didn't sort of start out as electronic.
Slightly influenced by them. I think there is a bit of techno risk going on in the background there.
So I was just wondering what your thoughts were on sort of Kraftwerk, sort of representation of German culture. I'm not quite sure how much you could sort of stretch a political or anyone could stretch a sort of a political argument too far with them, but they certainly represent a culture in a way that not many bands do.
I think Rammstein are quite explicit, you know. I mean, for instance, they will not sing in American or English, as it's sometimes known, because they detest the cultural imperialism of America. So, you know, they don't make statements, so they're not afraid to make political statements. Of course, it's got them into a lot of trouble, but I think they're quite like that. They're those kind of guys, you know. Which is, I think, one of the reasons I enjoy their music. They confront all these... rock music in particular, they're so ambivalent in their lyrics, it drives me crazy, you know. Postmodernism, as easily earlier mentioned, that seems to be where they take their lyrics from. Don't offend anyone or include everyone. And that's why I love bands, you know, like Rammstein, who you know, I've got something to say, and they say it loudly. So rare. Disturbed are similar, I think, the Chicago band. I don't know if you know their work. They're quite explicit about their politics. They, again, you know, quite similar. Their relationship with America is a troubled one. But they're the only two, you know. Perhaps there's a band called Nightwish, a Finnish band, and they're really champions of environmentalism. So their politics is mainly green stuff. But again, they're not afraid to, for instance, they detest all religions. So their atheism comes across, which again is so refreshing. A band that nails their colours to the mast. So yeah, they're the only three bands I can think of that are, you know, political in the true sense of the term, rather than just, you know, fashion politics. Are we done?
I think you've picked a subject there, Wes, that's for possibly a lot of members is a bit esoteric.
Oh dear.
So I think we'd probably say a lot of us don't know an awful lot about German culture anyway. Right. And
okay, I've always kind of assumed if you're a socialist, it was hard to avoid some kind of interest in German history, but perhaps I'm mistaken there.
Well, John's got his hand up now. John, you've got the floor.
Yes, I'm acquainted with some of German history and mythology, and I could see that they were definitely wrestling with something, just quite exactly what. I couldn't be sure. I mean, I could recognise a lot of these episodes from German history and culture, as I say, and mythology.
Which, of course, occasionally are one and the same things.
Sorry?
Which, of course, occasionally one and the same things, history and myth.
Well, yes, especially this country is a very good example of that. People in other parts of the world, when they see British troops arriving once again, don't say, "Oh, great, we'll get fair play." They say, "Oh, fuck, how long are these bastards going to stay this time?"
Yeah.
I'm sure they said that perhaps in various different languages, in various different places. So what it reminded me of, the video we watched tonight, was things I've seen before, where there was a lot of wonderful imagery, quite impressive stuff. And I've watched maybe a couple of hours, or sometimes people who make such imagery, they create films which go on for more than 2 hours, and you watch something that maybe lasts almost 3 hours, and at the end of it, you were quite impressed individually with all the different images, but when you get to the end of it, you wonder, what was that I really saw? And this was a bit like that. I could see it was, I mean, the what sounded to me like German spoken or half sung in a heavy metal type of voice, that all sounded quite sinister, and most of it looked quite sinister. But I think, despite what has been said already, some people could quite easily misinterpret that. After all, songs which are more explicit than the usual songs can end up being sung by empty heads at Tory party conferences. I'm thinking of John Lennon's Imagine. They just think, "Oh, what a lovely little song." So I wouldn't agree that no one could misunderstand what message was being conveyed there.
Well, we have a profound disagreement on that subject then, which is interesting. Of course, after watching it, I had no doubts. But then again, of course, I was primed by knowing their previous song. So I knew it would be, you know, about the agony that it is for them to be German and struggling with their identity. So, yeah, watching that, I was under no illusion. I wouldn't say it was anti-German, but it was certainly highlighting the problems with being German which I say with the current generation, I think we're still wrestling with. Well, I like to think so. Especially we don't wrestle with it more in this country.
Well, do we not wish to just jettison nationalism?
Yeah, I was thinking about most people in this country presumably, like Germans, think of their identity in terms of their history or their mythology or a mixture of the two. And that, as I say, is one of the greatest obstacles to socialist consciousness. But it's there, isn't it? There's no denying that we are culturally English and they're culturally German. And that's why I was trying to explore the relationship between socialism and German culture. It seems that most of you dismiss that there is an important or abiding connection between socialism and German culture, which is, I was only asking the question. I've always assumed, because of my own fascination with German history, that it might be the same for many other socialists. So it's interesting for me to find out this is not the case.
I think there is a connection, but it's the connection is more to do with having its part of its origins in German culture or whatever, and that culture's interaction with the rest of European culture and its interaction with a developing capitalist society. So I think that would be a more rounded way of looking at it, rather than just trying to isolate or seeming to isolate German culture or English culture, British culture or whatever. I would like to see if there were going to continue to be distinct cultures. I mean, we're tending to develop a world culture, but if there are going to be individual cultures that are loosely identified with what we are and we hope in the future were nations, that something positive could develop when we jettison all the stuff our ruling classes have put into the culture.
I think they've stolen cultures, you know, to make them as fearful of other cultures. I think they've subverted it to such an extent that that's the origin of nationalism. We should delight in the different cultures that we have in the world.
Yeah, I'd be inclined to agree with that we would like to find something positive in the different cultures, which of course there are, but anything the ruling class touches turns to shit, basically.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I think that's a downside of the globalism, I suppose. Some commentators have taken that back to the Enlightenment and the transition, you know, because that was the ideology, if you like, of the bourgeoisie, certainly during the French Revolution. And that they would say this was the beginning of the demise, if you like, of humanity. It was the embracing of the Enlightenment and the transition of, if you're going to put it in simple terms, from quality into quantity. Certainly that's what the, I suppose you'd say the Frankfurt School, that would be their main contention. I know not everyone in the party is a great fan of the Frankfurt School, but I still find them interesting.
We've got Paul, his hand up now. Paul?
Yeah, thanks, Paddy. Thanks, Sam. Yeah, it was very, very good in terms of, I mean, I was a bit of a disadvantage because I couldn't actually really see what was going on, but just the actual, in terms of the graphics, but just the music I found very sort of dark and quite sort of haunting, you know, could almost, you know, quite literally had sort of goosebumps, you know, and the hairs in the back of my head, back of my neck. I kid you know, it was almost, I could feel myself sort of wanting to curl up, you know, because this kind of haunting sort of...
very gothic, you know.
It's terrific, you know. Audibly, it was absolutely sensational. And I'll be honest, I've never even heard of them before. So I wouldn't mind, it'd be helpful to have the links. I'd like to watch that again in my own time. But yeah, I mean, I remember, as I said earlier on, I had the... looking back, it wasn't a misfortune, but certainly at the time it was a misfortune when I was a kid and being bullied big time at school.
This elf has found the meaning of Christmas has gone.
German, you know, and, you know, lots of people were getting the rip taken out of them for either being gay or the colour of their skin, you know, and many's a day, you know, these arseholes come up and sort of giving you the Zeke Heil kind of. And it was tough. It was tough at the time, but then, you know, you sort of either were to toughen up and either reject or rebel against it, and then it sort of stood me in good stead into my adulthood. But you know, I mean, there are a lot of stereotypical German people around, and you know, you see even comedians like, remember Harry Enfield used to do this sort of sketch where the sort of typical sort of blonde-haired, blue-eyed man in an anorak gets shown around London, you know, on a guided tour, and he just decides to stand up. I don't know if any of you have seen this, if you can identify or relate to what I'm talking about. And, you know, this sort of brash kind of, I feel as though I must apologise for the conduct of my nation during the war, things like that, you know. And, you know, it's pretty sort of humorous stuff, but it'd probably also be easily to get offended to it. And even, you know, a lot of, I mean, Italians are all sort of, you know, the French are supposed to be in the loving nation. The French people from France have got this kind of culture of they're supposed to be loving and sexy and all the rest of it. And then the Germans, of course, we all know that their reputation with, you know, putting towels down and securing their
cultural stereotypes, don't you love?
I mean, the Germans, I think, you know, I speak from personal experience, although my mother was a very loving woman, and I loved her dearly, you know. She did have this kind of really kind of, I wouldn't say domineering, but very sort of dominant kind of attitude, you know. And you knew when to draw the line, because although, you know, you could push her buttons not intentionally, you knew when enough was enough. And although she wasn't physically, you know, she can get very, dare I say it, typically German, you know, and you know, sort of raise a voice and that kind of big German sort of accent thing. And you know, so it was probably that kind of culture. And I think maybe these people, the musicians are really conveying that message. I can understand why they would find it difficult with their history and how they might try to excuse it or justify it or
just explain it. Yeah,
exactly. You know, that we're as troubled by this as most other people are, you know. And then, of course, it takes all sorts, doesn't it? And I find it really, really interesting. A lot of good contributions tonight as well. And I thank you kindly for bringing it to our attention and everything else that went along with it. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you.
Well, Tommy. Cool. Yeah, my first really a close childhood friend was of German parentage. And I remember on one occasion he said, can I be on the winning side? Because, of course, when we played war games, he always had to be a German. And that was the first time I realised what it meant to people I knew to be German.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we all probably have, whether we want to like to face up to admit it, we probably do have a prejudice because of what's been instilled. And as you know, you really have to sometimes work hard to try not to to let them come to the front of your attitude, if you like. Yeah, no, I totally get that. Yeah, interesting. Thank you, Tom.
My sister studied German history and was fluent in German, so and she had this dark gothic look about it. She could have been a goth, you know. Although, of course, she was born in the 40s. So, but she didn't seem to have any ill feeling towards the Germans, in spite of her experiences during wartime as a child. So, which I found interesting. I that's one of my great regrets. I didn't get to know her well enough till towards the end of her life to explore why she was so fascinated with Germany.
Have you been to the country? Have you visited?
No, I've rarely left the Shire. I don't like travelling.
No, sure. I mean, it's everything that they say about it. You know, it is a scrupulously clean place. You know, there's no denying. I'm sure there'll be a lot of shitholes as well. But generally speaking, anywhere that I've ever visited. I mean, it's like maybe not literally eat your dinner off the street, but there's very little litter and graffiti and all the rest around it. They seem to take a lot of pride in their environment, you know, in most places that I've seen anyway. So,
Yeah, I was at art school. It was very international, and I met several Germans who I got on with rather well.
Yeah.
Especially when they found out I was interested in their culture.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, that's making a difference.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you've got to keep an open mind about these things. When we talk about Germany and all the atrocities that went on, it was the Nazis that were the culprits, you know. My mother, although she never liked to talk about it much, my dad was a Welshman, you know, they met and married at the end of the war. And she despised the Nazis like most decent-minded people would. So, yeah, there's no love lost there. And I think most modern German or people from Germany, people who live in Germany are not especially rationalistic. They'll look back in horror with their history.
But in the video, don't you think Rammstein are suggesting that Nazism was somehow implicit with the German character, with the German culture, the violence?
There could be some
racism.
A bit of a disadvantage. I'm not sure if you know, Andrew, but I can't see that well. I'm actually registered blind, mate, so I can't actually see particularly well.
Oh,
but
okay.
I don't doubt, you know, that what you're saying is true. I'll need to try and see it a bit more in an alternative PC computer system that'll maybe help me out a bit with that. But yeah, I mean, I don't doubt that was the case. And the bounty's bound to be, you know, difference in attitudes with German culture, as there will be in every culture.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Not forgetting, not nationality, and I'm not talking nationality, your environment and how you're brought up and how you're raised and what's going on around about you. Yeah, no doubt. Interesting. Cheers.
Cool. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm glad one of you enjoyed it. Anyway. And as I said in my intro, they're not Rammstein, not to everyone's taste.
Just to say, I've put that link in the chat for anybody who wants to go and have another look at the video.
Cool, thanks, buddy.
Cool. Yeah, cheers, man.
I can't help remembering one time I had a job in a college and the departmental secretary was German and sent me an email saying, This is an encouragement to get your monthly report in on time. If you get your report in on time, I will tell you a joke. And I should tell you that to us Germans, a joke is no laughing matter.
Nice one.
Classy.
Very good.
Yeah.
I might have heard that before somewhere, but perhaps not.
Well, it's approaching 9 o'clock. I'm just wondering if anybody else has got anything to say. Oh, John. John's got his hand up. John?
Ah, yes. Just on the subject of German jokes, I heard one once that went, knock, knock, and you say, who's there? And they say, Gestapo. And you say, Gestapo who? And they just say, just the Gestapo. And that's it. That's in line with the stereotypical harshness of Germans. I think Germany will never live the Nazi regime down. That's just an unfortunate byproduct of people's conditioning. But on the subject of Deutschland über alles, originally that phrase was to an exhortation for people to overcome this ridiculous provincialism that you had all these 300 or so different little principalities and tiny little almost nation states, or kind of not quite nation states, but little principalities in what had previously been called the Holy Roman Empire, which eventually was neither Holy Roman nor an empire.
Yeah, I love that
and
joke as well.
So German culture was something that was seeking to, or the people behind it were seeking to bring about a society where German culture would have its own nation state. That was what was becoming possible with the development of capitalism. So it suited certain people to bring that about. But what I was going to say about Deutschland über alles was that what they were referring to was, as I say, trying to overcome this provincialism and to emphasise the unity of a future Germany, which in the minds of a lot of these people, it was quite a poetic and liberating and peaceful thing, because a lot of these people really believed that if you developed a nation state, that would be some cause for celebration. But in fact, we know how history turned out. History often turns out not as people would have expected. But I think after the First World War, then the words Deutschland über alles took on a different meaning, and it did suggest the notion of world domination, which is still people's idea about it today. But I did notice something else in the torchlight processions. That seems to have been, I always assumed, I think I used to assume that was something the Nazis were particularly fond of, and the Nazi Party sort of initiated. But in actual fact, I think it's been for a long, long time part of German culture to have these things, because when Angela Merkel gave her a little farewell ceremony, it was all done by torchlight.
Right.
It's all these torchlights, and there was German soldiers there, and there was what I suppose was meant to be a nice rendition of Deutschland. Well, it's not Deutschland über alles, Einigkeit und Recht und Freiheit. And they gave a little rendition of that. Whereas during the Nazi regime, they did sing the first verse of that song, which is Deutschland über alles, but it always was done in conjunction with their own little anthem called the Horst Wessel song, which was about a horrible little guy in the Nazi party that they elevated to a state of sanctity because he was murdered by the so-called communists.
Yeah.
So there's lots of little snippets in history and lots of little influences here and there. And the phrase Deutschland über alles, I think, does live on as a sort of exhortation to world domination, in the same way that the battle hymn of the British Empire, Land of Hope and Glory, does.
Yeah. I think it was always an intellectual exercise for the bourgeoisie to create nation states. And one of the main ingredients was this identity, this national identity that they grasped from the past, you know, and knitted together all the different elements. That's why modern historians delight in deconstructing national identity. it's such fun to find out how they put all these myths, all these legends and all these historical events together to create something called a national identity, or which became, of course, the most important part of bourgeois ideology. It's a conversation killer. Well, yeah, the important thing is, I don't think it was exclusive to Germany. I think all nations, well, I say all, but the ones that I know of had an intelligentsia dedicated to defining and creating national identities. Because, of course, the ruling class were always international, you know, the aristocracy and later the bourgeoisie itself. Anyway, sorry.
Yes, I was just going to say that from their point of view, if you see it from the point of view of the bourgeoisie, they would have to fill the heads of the workers with some sort of myths. Otherwise, what would be in it for them? You know, so it's no wonder that they filled in, I mean, all these national anthems, for example, they're all full of, I mean, the German one is actually, apart from Deutschland über alles, which because of history has got different meanings from what was originally intended. Second verse is all about German women, wine and song, and not in a nasty sexist way particularly, no, in a more sort of poetic kind of way. And the third verse that they use nowadays is really about, I suppose, bourgeois liberalism, but an intended benign form of it, because it's unity, right and freedom, Einigkeit und Recht und Freiheit.
Yeah.
And let us all pursue this purpose, brotherly, and so on and so forth. It goes on like this. But if you look at the French national anthem, it ends with "Let their vile blood go flowing over the land." You would translate it as, but in actual fact, it refers to the furrows in the fields. So the invaders, okay, they're invaders, so they've been aggressive. But you know, the song is quite vile. Fratelli d'Italia ends up with "Pronti alla morte," which is "We are ready to die." So already people's heads have been filled with nationalistic nonsense in these anthems. And you see it at international football matches when they have the rendition of of the various national anthems, and they all go into a kind of trance-like state.
It's more like religion than politics, isn't it?
Yeah.
Of course, we must remember, in the context of the time, nationalism was progressive. That's why, for instance, you can call William Wallace revolutionary, but Bonnie Prince Charlie was definitely a reactionary, although they both fought for Scottish nationalism.
Yeah, in historical terms, yes, I suppose so.
Keith's got his hand up. Keith?
Yeah, sorry, it's me again. I was just going to say something about torchlit parades because I like a nice torchlit parade. it's party should do one. I'll come back in for a torchlit parade. No, I was just going to say that torchlit parades are not like a deep rooted German thing. They come from America. Yeah. Like a lot of the shit that the Nazis got, they got it from America. And they got torchlit parades from America. It was a political thing that American political parties did. They'd got it from ancient Greece and they revived it. And it flew back across the Atlantic. Originally, it went to the sports things, but it wasn't a direct translation. But that's where it came from in modern terms. It's a very reactionary place, America, but I won't go on about that. Hang on, I'll stop now because I'm babbling on. Shut up.
No, that's interesting. The origin in America, torchlit parades. I suppose we tend to think of them as medieval. So I don't know if they go back further than the time you're talking about. I'll have to have a medievalist along.
Well, I suppose in earlier times that would be probably one of the best ways for people to see in the darkness what they were actually doing.
Presumably, I mean, just making assumptions. The thing about the Nazis was, of course, they borrowed almost every element of their ideology from the past. There's very little knew about it. If it wasn't the Roman Empire, it was the Saxon heroes who fought the Roman Empire. Everything, even their the swastika didn't that owe its origins to Indian culture? Or was it one
of the things that we used? Yeah, because some old ladies who are into Hinduism who have used that symbol in their gardens have run into trouble because they've just been completely misunderstood.
Yeah. Perhaps you can make a broader claim that there's nothing new in human culture. We always borrow from the past. That's why we have a fleet of buses, you know, alluding to ships. I remember first time at art school, we were asked to create a monster, to paint a monster, and without exception, all of the monsters were combinations of different animals, or mythological. Well, most mythological beings were hybrids of nature. So yeah, it's originality in human terms is a difficult one to pin down. I could go on about German culture, but I probably shouldn't. The relationship between the round table and the SS, for instance. But stop me.
Well, I think in that little film we saw earlier, it seemed to me that Germania was based, in terms of how she looked, she was based on Gloriana, the version of, you know, the highly mysticised or mythicised, I should say, version of Queen Elizabeth I.
Right, right. Yeah, I think, was it Europa? Wasn't she always a she?
I think so, as is Britannia as well.
Mm, mm. It's a strange role for a woman to play. Of course, during the French Revolution, one of the icons was a woman holding the tricolor in the famous painting.
Mm-hmm.
So women come in handy as political symbols, but are, until very recently, of course, not politically active or allowed to be politically active. They're used as symbols, which is interesting.
Well, yeah, I think it's been said that they're put on a pedestal, but just so long as they don't say anything from that pedestal.
Yeah. Yeah, I was surprised, obviously, when I first saw the video. I couldn't. Why a black one? And then it occurred to me that, as I say, Germania had always, I think, traditionally been portrayed as a woman. So why not a contemporary, very famous, I believe, in Germany, a black actress? So it kind of made sense when I did a bit of research and thought about it. And, of course, it's a kick in the face for all races, you know, which is what I particularly enjoy about it.
Okay, well, if nobody's got anything else to contribute, it's gone 9:05, so...
Right, is that the witching hour for these events?
Well, we made a... Actually, well done, Wes and everybody, for making a discussion out of it, which at first didn't seem as if it was going to be that promising.
Shell-shocked, I think, after the video.
No, that was good. That was well done.
Well, thanks. Well, I hope you enjoyed it. It was... Yeah, but if you get a chance, I think it's well worth watching again. You know, now you have a bit of background on it.
Thanks, Andrew. Thanks very much.
Cheers. Cheers, guys.
Yes, thank you.
Cheers, everyone.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Good night, everybody. Bye.